11 p.m., we offer a sonic reflection of labor in solidarity provided by our all-women DJ collective meeting in the ladies' room. Workers' rights are human rights on your station for jazz and justice. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no.
The jury of your peers, having found you guilty, 10 years.
Come on, get that set.
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice, that's what you find, just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us again on our weekly Tuesday morning broadcast. Crossroads is your station for jazz and justice here on WPFW. WPFW is heard around the world, and I want to thank you for all of this modern technology, the streaming and TikTok and so forth. As a result of that, our show now has a global audience, and I want to thank all the folk who've been writing, calling, emailing, etc., to say they enjoy the topics that we bring you here on Crossroads. As usual, we had another interesting topic, and our subject this morning is, what are your rights during the D.C. takeover? But before we start, we open up with what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Hey. Alligator Alcatraz, the decision held by Representative Wasserman Schultz. A Florida judge ruled to shut down Alligator Alcatraz, a decision celebrated by U.S. Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Environmental concerns were one factor in the decision. The ruling requires the state of Florida and the Trump administration to cease construction. The court order mandates that fencing, lighting, generators, and waste receptacles be removed from the facility within 60 days. The Everglades immigrant internment camp is a testament to cruelty, waste, and corruption. It needs to be closed, said Wasserman Schultz. Last night's ruling is a victory for the Everglades, and it blunts the reckless environmental threat this facility poses. She emphasized the importance of due process and human rights, calling for an end to racial and ethnic profiling and the cruel conditions in detention facilities nationwide. ICE is deporting thousands with minor offenses, from traffic violations to weed possession. Many people with little or no criminal records have been swept into the administration's immigration's dragnet since January. The risk has grown even greater for thousands of immigrant families under the Trump administration as officials expand efforts to deport people with little or no criminal history. The monthly number of people deported whose most serious convictions was a traffic violation as driving without a license has more than tripled in the last 6 months, hitting almost 600 in May, according to new estimates. People with no criminal convictions at all make up 2/3 of the more than 120,000 people deported between January and May. Wow. For another 8%, the only offense on their record was illegal entry into the U.S. Only about 12% were convicted of a crime that was either violent or potentially violent. The numbers contradict officials' continued claim that immigration enforcement is focusing on the worst of the worst. Some attorneys worried this pressure to deport more people is leading to an increase in racial profiling and that more drivers of color are being pulled over for minor traffic violations as a way to check their legal status. 20 states have recently passed laws that increase local police involvement in immigration enforcement. The number of people deported with only nonviolent offenses like trespassing, failure to appear in court, marijuana offenses, shoplifting, and traffic violations have almost doubled since January. Excuse me. Trump signed order targeting cashless bail. President Trump has signed two executive orders on Monday, ramping up federal intervention on crime, with one aimed at ending cashless bail policies and another seeking to crack down on those who desecrate the American flag. A White House official confirmed Trump had signed the order that threatens to revoke the federal funding for citizen states that have cashless bail policies. Proponents of the policy argue cash bail disproportionately harms low-income offenders who cannot afford to post bond. Trump and other critics have argued cashless bail policies allow offenders to end up back on the streets. Trump is also expected to sign, and he has signed, an order in which individuals desecrate the American flag by identifying state and local laws they may have violated. A landmark 1989 Supreme Court ruling established that burning the American flag is protected under the First Amendment. But unlike in Washington, D.C., where the federal government has more authority, Trump cannot take control of another city's police department. State and local officials have also pushed back on threats to send in the National Guard. Also, the ACLU statement on escalating federal takeovers. Civil liberties organizations sound alarm as Trump administration deploys more National Guard troops to scare D.C. communities. With additional state National Guard troops deploying to D.C. as untrained fellow law enforcement agents perform local police duties in city streets, the American Civil Liberties Union is issuing a stark reminder to all federal and military officials that no matter what uniform they wear or what authority they claim, they are bound by the U.S. Constitution and all federal and local laws. President Trump has also ordered FBI personnel and other federal officers who similarly are not trained for local policing to patrol the city. He earlier promised to let police do whatever the hell they want, raising grave concerns about civil rights abuses, particularly for black and brown people. And that's been what we call the grapevine.
In progress.
And as you can see, we are in a mess. And I want to thank our two guests. And our topic is, what are your rights during this D.C. takeover? Tiffany Reed Esquire, public defender, a dynamite young lady. Tiffany is a staff attorney in the juvenile service program of the Community Defender Division. I'm getting an echo. So I'm going to say that, there you go. In addition to directly representing the district children in the criminal legal system, Tiffany also sits on several youth advocacy committees and collaborates with various groups with community partners to provide community-based resources to the families. She is also with the Georgetown Juvenile Justice Initiative and was a Black Public Defender Fellow with the Black Defender Leadership Institute. I never heard of that. I want to thank you for doing that, Tiffany. You warm my heart. Thank you. Good morning, ladies, to both of you for joining Mertine and I here on Crossroads. This is our weekly show. As I said earlier, we've been on air for 17 years. Every Tuesday, we missed four times in 17 years. This shows you the need that we feel to bring you this show, because we came out of prison and been doing this kind of show for 17 years. And a few years prior to that, we worked at the television station as a producer at Channel 5. So what we try to do is bring you information and news that you can use in your daily life. And because of the takeover in Washington, D.C., our topic is, what are your rights during the D.C. takeover? And I've heard that both of you young ladies have been on the front line. You've been involved with what's going on with the takeover, the deployment of the National Guards with our youth, and et cetera. And it is an honor and a pleasure to invite both of you young ladies here on Crossroads. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
We'd like to see you smile when you come here on Crossroads.
How could we not?
Nicole, can you give us a little brief bio on what you're doing and involved in before we get into the story?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Nicole Newman. I'm the executive director of a youth organization in DC called Critical Exposure. And we work at the intersections of art and photography and community organizing. So that is our primary work and what we've been doing for the last 20 years. And right now I'm a part of the Youth Safety and Security Council of strategy group of Free DC. And so during this federal takeover, there was a group of folks who were activated who work with young people to think about what does this takeover mean in the context of our city for our young folks who we know have always been criminalized and targeted by law enforcement in our city.
Thank you. And Tiffany, it is a pleasure having you. I heard about you, young lady. You've been raising a lot of sand down at that courthouse down there. So you've been taking on cases that nobody else would take. But I want to thank you for taking this time. Our topic is, what are your rights during this D.C. takeover? We understand that because of the takeover, folks are afraid to come out of their house. They're dragging people out of the cars without probable cause. The cops are wearing masks. You don't know if they're stick-up boys or they're gangsters. You don't know who you've been arrested by, and it's creating all kinds of fear. Folks don't know what to do. Yesterday was the first day of school, and a lot of kids were afraid to go to school. A lot of community groups were walking the streets, standing on the corners, making sure their kids are not pulled out of off the school buses and dragged through the halls of the school. This is a terrible climate that we exist in now. Tiffany, what is it that our listeners can do to protect themselves and their kids if you're pulled over or approached by the National Guard during this federal takeover?
Yeah, so one, thank you for having this conversation and for all the work that you have continually done over the years in D.C. and educating the community. So specifically as it relates to, and I'm thinking about this as top of mind with the juvenile curfew, that we still have a few more days left on, or at least the new latest expansion of it. So it's been on the books for a while, but in these, you know, as of July 7th, it became the Amendment Act, the Juvenile Curfew Emergency Amendment Act, went into place. And that adjusted both the kind of the age range and the time frame, kind of getting more people in, and more young people captured into the system. And so I think what's probably most unique about that is, as it differs from the existing act that has been on the books, is the curfew zones that have been able to be put in place as a result of this. So these curfew zones allow the police chief with 24 hours notice to decide on one specific neighborhood and kind of crack down there for a span of 4 days. And in that time frame, the only kind of heads up that the community gets is like on the MPD website, on the DC government website. The stated purpose the stated intent was that if they were to get any news that there were going to be any large gatherings, then those were going to be the communities and spaces that law enforcement was going to crack down on and occupy. And so we've seen that in Navy Yard, we've seen that in U Street Corridor, and we've seen that in several different neighborhoods as well, the demographics of which are not alarming. And so the other thing that's specific to this as it relates to the amendment is the group gathering. So it is eight, has to be less than nine people. If it's greater than nine, then that's what would trigger some type of law enforcement interaction. And not only can the parent be fined, but the young person would have to go through some community service hours as well. And so the stated intent was that, you know, to keep kids out of the street at certain times, during certain time frames, and to kind of spread who is able to be liable for breaking curfew. And it's, I mean, it's summertime in DC. So obviously kids are outside in any neighborhood. But particularly because of, I will not speak to that specifically. Okay. I'm going to stick to the law.
Okay. All right. Nicole, Nicole.
Yeah.
Same question. What is it? Go ahead.
Yeah. So I think, you know, one of the things that we are seeing with the curfew zones is that even though the law says that groups of eight or more young people like can trigger an interaction with law enforcement, what we're hearing from young people is that even when they're in groups of four or five or traversing across the city, that they're being detained, questioned,
and harassed.
And so we're also seeing things like a lot of young people coming into contact with law enforcement for things like fare evasion, just being out. Right. And so even though the intended, I think folks, and it's not just the National Guard, right? It's all of the other federal law enforcement agencies that are present, the DA, the FBI, the Secret Service, Capitol Park Police, working in coordination with MPD. And so during this federal takeover, we've really seen three groups of people targeted. So we've seen our migrant brothers and sisters being targeted by ICE and Immigration's enforcement. We've seen Black young people being criminalized, stopped, and targeted by law enforcement, and then the unhoused community being targeted. And so I think it's important to name that those are the three groups who are coming into contact with law enforcement the most in this federal takeover.
You know, you said something that I've experienced as a youth in D.C. when they just passed a curfew law and they say it had to be eight or nine or more or less, and it may be two or three, and they still are within the bounds of not being in violation of the curfew, but yet the cops will come over and harass them. D.C. Youth, we have the highest incarceration rate of any city in the world, not only in Washington, D.C. or in the station, in the world. And then the newly appointed state's attorney, U.S. attorney for D.C., Jeanine Pirro, said that she instructed her staff that anybody that's arrested, we're going after maximum punishment and penalties. D.C. lock up more youth in Washington, D.C. than any city in the world. Don't take my word for it, people. Check out the stacks and the information. You're talking about locking up more kids who have already come from the most over-incarcerated city in the country and the world, and they give them more time. We got guys doing 30, 40, 50 years, going as 18, 19, 20 years old, and they come home as 70, 80-year-old old men. Why are we punishing our youth when the answer ain't punishment? The answer is intervention, prevention, social services, jobs reduce crime. Not a cell or a gun. Jobs reduce crime. So I'm worried, why are our kids always being targeted? And again, Black and brown youth. Tiffany, you work as a public defender. We did a show a couple of years ago down in New Beginnings, and we go down to the D.C. Superior Court, the Juvenile Division. And I'm telling you, it makes you want to cry. You see all Black and brown defendants, no white kids. Out of the 1,800 people arrested since January and deported, Black and brown are being rounded up, hounded up, harassed, and thrown away. And these kids don't know what to do. Not only the kids, adults don't know what to do. If you ride down the street, what do you do if you pulled over at one of these traffic stops and you don't know what your rights are? What can we let our listeners know? Here's what you can do, one, two, three, or here's what you can't or shouldn't do.
Certainly. And as important as to know your rights, right? Knowledge is knowing your rights. Wisdom is really knowing when to exercise them and how to exercise them, because at the end of the day, we want our kids to be able to get home safely. And so specifically as it relates to the curfew, as Nicole and I were speaking earlier, about is, one, to stay informed about what the special zones are going to be. Those are supposed to be announced on, and have been up to date, announced on MPD site and on DC government's site as well, to know where those zones are. Now, it's supposed to be 24 hours notice unless there's an emergency, but that is a good place to start. Also, there are exceptions and some exemptions, I should say, with regard to the groupings and the curfew in and of itself. And there are a list of exemptions. Some of those are like coming home from work late, like, you know, some like school event. If you're outside of your like next door neighbor's home, there is a list of those that would exempt you from this law being triggered. I mean, some of the other tips are kind of, you know, basic, and unfortunately we hope for the best in those interactions, right? You know, when it comes to being stopped by law enforcement, while knowing your rights is knowing that you do not have to speak if you are, you know, walking down the street and being asked to show your ID. If you're not operating a vehicle, you don't have to show your ID. I think perhaps one of the conversations that we have, at least that I have a lot with young people with regard to marijuana use, is that while it has been decriminalized in DC and then for certain amounts, the places in which you are allowed to consume it are still pretty broad. I mean, are still pretty narrow, right? So if you're walking down a public street, that's still illegal. If you are driving in a car on a public road, that's still illegal. And so I think when there isn't a fleshed out conversation of what these laws actually look like, then there becomes kind of a false narrative of what is permissible. And as opposed to, you know, there being kind of like a broader narrative to make sure that young people are covered and understand what those laws are, they end up kind of being wrapped up into the system. Or at least having some sort of negative police interaction that, but for knowledge of the law, could have been avoided.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Same thing. Go ahead, Nicole.
Yeah, I was just going to share that the exemptions to the curfew law are if they are with a parent or guardian, if they are completing an errand or direction at the direction of a parent or guardian, if they are in a motor vehicle, if they're returning from work or home without detour or stop, if they're become involved in an emergency, if they're standing on a sidewalk that joins their residence or residence of a next door neighbor, if the neighbor did not complain to the police. But even then, we've seen young people be accosted there. So I think this is official designation, but we know that what's official, what's on paper, and what's practice is a little different. And then, you know, Tiffany, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because some of the Know Your Rights that we've been doing with young people, we've said we've been really teaching them about the difference between something being decriminalized and illegal. And so it is illegal for you to possess marijuana under the age of 21. You cannot smoke in public. You cannot smoke while driving a car. And marijuana is still illegal federally. So in certain like that are considered federal property, like Logan Circle, DuPont Circle, the National Mall, you cannot smoke in those areas. And then we've also been educating young people on truancy laws, right? So letting them know that while when school, because school started right between the hours of 9 to 2, that they are expected to be in school. And if they are not in school, law enforcement may question or detain them because of that. And then we always are teaching young people. We have a little quick and dirty that we do with them that are like, am I free to go? Am I under arrest? I choose to remain silent. I do not consent to a search, so that they understand that there is a way that they have to exert their rights. And again, what we tell them is, it's around like prevention and also, If the situation is escalating, we let them know that they can film the police, that is within their right. That if a police officer says back up, that you take one step back and then continue to keep recording. And so we're doing our best as a community to make sure that young people understand that none of this is ideal. We don't want to be in these circumstances. We don't want them to be targeted and criminalized, but we really do feel like information in these scenarios is important, and that they need the information in order to be able to navigate these exchange.
What happens if you try to exert your rights and they pull you over? What kind of probable cause? I mean, riding through U Street in different parts of the city, and they got roadblocks, and these roadblocks are checkpoints. They're just opening up the doors and pulling people out of the cars. What about the probable cause? You're sitting in a vehicle and you come into a roadblock, a checkpoint, do they have the right to pull you out of the car? What give them the probable cause to stop the vehicle? And I know it is in a high crime area, but these are all, most black areas are high crime areas. Unemployment plays a significant part in terms of driving these numbers up. So what do people do? We talk about youth, but if the cops don't respond, if I tell the police I don't want to answer your question, I'm not going to give you my ID, and they say you're going to give it to me anyway, what do you do? Or what can you do?
I'm not a lawyer, so I'll defer to Tiffany.
Come on, Tiff.
And I mean, this is the kind of default answer, unfortunately, for a lot of these things as a lawyer. It depends. Because I can't really speak directly to a specific instance without knowing, you know, kind of more facts surrounding it. But also we have seen, how an ideas of an emergency enforcement have been broadened, and what that looks like on the individual basis. And so there are lots of exemptions that fall outside of that. And so I won't speak specifically to what should happen, what will happen in those scenarios, because there really is not a guarantee, and probable cause is not difficult to find. It is a very low legal standard.
Yes.
And for that reason, a lot of these stops end up, kind of passing the smell test when it comes before the court.
For those mothers who are listening to this show and they got young black boys and young black girls, and because we know the incarceration rate for black girls is on the increase. So black and brown people are being targeted. And I'm surprised that they're taking all the brown people, all the Spanish and the Latinos, and taking them out. And there's an old saying, they came for my neighbor one night and I didn't do nothing. Then they came for me in the morning and was nobody there. It's their turn now, but we are next. And we've already been isolated in terms of those youth. These high checkpoint police stops, et cetera, are in high crime areas. People, I just heard yesterday that Trump and the government spent over $300 billion to send aid to Ukraine. $300 billion. We don't need $300 billion to stop the crime and reduce the crime in America. Jobs reduce crime. Social services reduce crime. When they say that the average salary in D.C. is $45,000 for black people and the average salary for white is $125,000, and they keep raising the cost up for and cutting out food stamps, Medicaid, cutting out the Job Corps, we anticipate that the crime rate is going to skyrocket. You're talking about trying to stop it. Don't send $300 million to buy weapons to kill people. Send the $300 billion. We can solve the crime problem in America. With $300 billion, I could solve the crime on the moon. If they gave me that much money, I'd go up on a bicycle. So we need total support. I want our folks to know, and who's listening to the show, what do you tell your kids in view of all this fear, all the police walking them down the street? And D.C. is already the most over-policed city in the world. Every police department around the world, from Scotland Yard to Interpol, all of them have an office there or presence. Yeah. So we are already over-policed, and you're bringing in more cops, more National Guard, and they're targeting our youth, black and brown youth. What do we do?
Yeah.
One of the things that we keep working with our young people around is understanding their social location and also understanding their risk assessment, right? So what's the goal of any interaction? But I would flip that question and say, what do we do is that we have to listen to young people. And so on Saturday, we did a youth assembly with the Trigger Project, Black Swan Academy, DC Girls Coalition, and we had about 55 young folks come together for both a Know Your Rights training and a press conference. And those young people put together a list of demands of what they want to see adults do. And some of those things is that they want more third spaces at night. They want to revoke the cell phone policy in schools so that they are able to film interactions and feel safe. They want our elected officials to hold police accountable and make sure that police are identifying themselves and not wearing face coverings. They want the DC to protect our sanctuary city status. They want to see a ban on enforcement in places like schools, churches, child care centers, doctor's offices, libraries. They want every school to be trained in a safety protocol. They want to protect unhoused people. And so our young folks are brilliant. They know what they need. They know what they want. And I encourage listeners and adults who are listening, who are thinking about what it means to keep young people safe, to continue to center their voice, to center their experiences, and to listen to what they say they need to be supported.
Thank you.
And I also want to underscore, yes, of course, listen to the young people. They have brilliant ideas and are able to see these spaces in ways that the rest of us cannot, because old now, but also listening to the organizations on the ground who are really doing this work, like Critical Exposure, like Black Swan Academy, like Free DC, like the organizations that are really centering youth voice, but are also creating brave and safe spaces for young people to gather and to be heard, and to be organized, and to really get their ideas out there. So not only is that, you know, obviously helpful for the young people that are involved, but it's great for the rest of us that there are organizations and groups on the ground that are prioritizing especially at this moment, organizations that have already been doing the work. So shout out to Critical Exposure and other organizations that have been doing this.
Yeah, this is amazing what these young people are doing and with young people leading these organizations. This is WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. We're sharing information what you can do to protect yourself, young people and even older people, what we need to do. I want to say one thing that Albert Einstein said, the world will not be destroyed by those who do evil, but by those who watch them without doing anything.
Nothing.
It seems like such a tall task, but what do we do? We've got to fight this madness that's going on.
Thank you.
Out of control.
Thank you. We have a couple callers on the air. We always open up the phone for our listeners to make a question or comment of our guests. Alf, we'll take our first caller. You're on the air, please.
Good morning, Roach. This is...
Oh, I know it'd be you, Rick. Boy, I knew my first caller every week. Come on, where you calling from, Rick?
Germany.
Calling from just 15 minutes outside of Munich, Germany. And first, let me say to Nkinji Touré, rest in peace and farewell, sister.
Yeah. Yes.
Second, who is Jeanine Pirro and what position does she hold in D.C.?
You want to try that, Tiffany? Or
Well, let me just say this. Their DEI didn't earn it. The whole administration is DEI. They didn't earn it.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Tiffany.
The newly appointed U.S. attorney for D.C., so D.C.'s prosecutor.
You know, I'm very familiar with Jeanine Pirro. She's been a host on Fox News television for a long time, been a staunch supporter of Trump. Her husband, who she's got divorced from recently, was convicted of tax fraud and income tax issues, white collar offenses. And he received a pardon
Jeanine Pirro, the state U.S. attorney for D.C.'s husband, received a pardon from Trump's last administration before he come out. So she's been a staunch Republican supporter and a hardliner and a right winger. And for her to say they're going to lock up our youth and asking her staff they seek the maximum punishment. Lady, we already got more kids locked up in Washington, D.C. than any city in the world. And you're focusing more on our youth, black and brown, and talking about giving. I got two friends just come home, Tiffany. Both of them, one did 49 and a half years. Another did 50 years in prison. And they came out, and this guy's 72 years old, and asked him, what are your employment prospects? He never had a job in his entire life. He went in at 22 and came out at 50. Who going to hire a 72-year-old man to do what? And our kids now is being thrown into this same scenario. So it is really frustrating, and we got to do something about it. Let me shut up and take out. And I want to say thank Rick for calling. Y'all just meeting Rick for the first time. But he calls every week from Germany. He got tired of America. I wish I could leave America and go to Janice, whatever that country called. I want out of here because I don't have. Let me shut up. Let's take our next caller, please. You're on the line. Question or comment?
Hello, how are you?
You're on the air. Hello, how you doing?
I'm good. So I just want to bring up a couple of pointers that Cormaster Berries, along with the NAACP, did a meeting last Friday over at the Southeast Tennis Club. Okay.
Yes.
So therefore, I do not remember all the attendees, but there was a high ranking official from 7D Police Department. I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with names, but she made a couple of things clear. First of all, Corey Berry said, and yeah, we need to listen to the kids, but the kids don't have enough experience. They haven't been out long enough to know what happened in the past. And she brought up some things in the past, mainly Emmett Till. And she said that we're living in an Emmett Till day. Okay?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
We have rights, yes. But to tell the police that I'm not showing you my ID, the first thing that officer said was, we don't know what that he's giving them, what instructions that, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is giving them, but don't put yourself in harm's way. If they ask you to do something, just do it. Rather do it to be here to talk about it, to say how they treating you, than they snatch you up somewhere. And another thing that she stated, our kids are being profiled because of the black hoodies. They made a pact there to get the kids out of the black hoodies. Somebody was commissioned to give up his, some type of a graphic to put on them. There were 10 people offered to pay for the 100 hoodies to get these kids out of these black hoodies. WPFW, everybody can't be everywhere, but so far, it's only been 2 days. I haven't heard anybody mention that meeting. And there was Melanie Hopkins, I think her name is. She does with voter rights, and Lord knows, I think I'm saying her name wrong. But she traveled talking about people voting. Y'all more into the social circle, so you know who I'm talking about. Beautiful, voluptuous black woman. I can't think of her name, but if you find out who was attendance, those were the main things that they were saying. Knowing your rights, our human rights, they ain't working for them. And take our kids, tell our kids to take off those black hoodies. And one little girl, because they did a question on her being 15, you know what she said? She said
what?
She said
we talking about trauma.
We didn't hear
talking
you.
About trauma.
You dropped out. She said what?
Yeah.
Hello.
Backing up.
Go ahead. I think we lost.
No, I appreciate the comment, and I was actually at that meeting, and so have a lot of feedback and thoughts about it. But what I will say is one of the things I think we have to do is balance what is the short term to keep our young people safe, and also how do we understand these things from a systemic issue. And so while I understand some of the sentiment of like compliance, right, we are not ever telling young people to not comply. We are telling young people to know what their rights are, and to try to get out of those interactions or to prevent those interactions before they get in them. But I also think that when we just problematize young people and make it seem like that if they just pull up their pants or if they just do this, then it takes out the fact that even though the federal forces are here now, our young people were targeted. Jump outs have been a thing in D.C.
Before yes.
That. So yes. I want us to focus more on having a critique of the systems that create the conditions in our community than making our young people be the problem in our community.
You know, one of the youngsters tell the police, but the cops tell the kid, show me your ID. And say, I don't have to show you my ID. And when he make that statement, you have to be careful how you exercise your rights and where. If you're alone with a cop or two of them, you don't have no rights. I don't care what the law says. It's their word against you. And when they look at a young kid who's supposed to be knowledgeable or intelligent, they see it as a threat. Yeah. Or you're being disrespectful. You're not complying with a lawful order. Is there any, I know the answer just before I ask it. Is there any relief that if your kid or son or daughter is arrested or they're brutalized and abused, like this young girl that they locked up for using a Fed card from a high school kid, I think her name was Tiffany Evans, and they beat her up, threw on the ground, spray painted, they hit her in the face, they literally released her, but this was a nonviolent offense. What do you do, or who do you turn to if you feel you were abused, your rights were violated, and the cops say, damn what the law says, and they did what they had to do to you? Is there any relief? Is there any way that these kids or families can go to say, hey, they did this to me and my kids? What do we get? How do we get results?
So I think one of the probably quickest initial moves that can be made is filing a complaint with the Office of Police Complaints. And while, you know, it's still within the system, there are people who are tracking this information. And so even though right now DC streets have not only MPD officers, but other law enforcement unidentifiable at times, and that there's not much that office can do with those specifically, they are still tracking those complaints and tracking those numbers and passing it along to the related agencies. And so while I can't say what is going to happen, you know, with that information, you know, months out, weeks out, certainly after even the curfew and this current occupation is finished, that is information that is being tracked. And these kind of data points are going to be necessary when it comes to having council meetings, when it comes to having the next few hearings. It is important that this kind of information can be tracked and certain things can be pointed to specifically.
Okay.
What's so dreadful is like the incident that happened a few weeks ago. I don't remember what state, but a young man, it wasn't raining, and they stopped him, pulled him over, and dragged him out of his car, broke his window, threw him down on the floor. This on the ground, this is the kind of response we are getting automatically. It's just so disrespectful. Folks who don't know us have no business being in charge of us.
You know, I'm really hurt. I mean, we've been doing this show for a while, and it hurts. And this is one of them topics that really, really hurts, that we're talking about targeting our youth. And we know that they are in high crime areas. And I've been stopped by the police many times, and I know that if they got you by yourself, I don't care what the law says, what your rights are. It's you and them, a big, huge, 6-foot white guy with a gun and a billy club, and you a 15 or 14-year-old kid terrorized and scared to death. And then you say, I don't have to show my license. You are intimidated. You are frightened. You're scared for your life, and there's nowhere to turn. One of the things I like to suggest that we do, everybody has a cell phone. When you see the cops approach, stop, arrest, or detain somebody, pull out your phone.
Right.
Pull out your phone and record everything. When they give you an order to step back, step back. Don't be disrespectful. Step back. But record all this. And when you say we need to file a complaint with the police citizen complaint review, that's like throwing a peanut in the elephant's mouth. You won't even see nothing come out of there. You know, the elephant don't even know it's in his mouth. I've been dealing with the government for the past 70, 80 years, and I'm telling you, trying to get some kind of redress in this climate, with what's coming on from the White House and all this usurping or usurping of our rights and policies and our home rule act is being violated, is being disrespected, and is not being complied with. We need to know, as I said before, we can do. But that's why we invited both of you young ladies who've been going to these meetings, dealing with that youth people, young, and let them know what's going on. I want to ask you one other question. Tiffany, as an attorney with the Juvenile Justice Project at the Public Defender's Office, how many white kids did you see down in the courthouse when you go down to the court to deal with your clients?
I will say the number is overwhelmingly black and brown.
Overwhelmingly black and brown. And they're talking about, again, we lead the world in arrests for juveniles. Washington, D.C., we lock up more kids in Washington, D.C. than any city in this country and in globally. Now they're talking about locking up more of our kids. Over 5,000 juveniles, 5,000 people from Washington, D.C. are confined in the federal system. My question is, so all the people that's been arrested, and Jeanine Pirro said, this U.S. attorney for D.C., that these people, if they're arrested by the federal police, they go to the federal authorities. We don't have Lawton no more, so all arrests now are technically federal. And the feds do not have a juvenile facility to send our kids. So where are they sending them after they are arrested? Yeah. We don't know.
So in D.C., the pretrial detention facility is the Youth Services Center right over in Mount Olivet in Ivy City.
Yes.
And so post-sentencing, juvenile adjudication the only residential facility that's within kind of D.C.'s purview is actually in Laurel, Maryland. That's the New Beginnings Youth Development Center. Outside of those two, if there is a need for a what's termed like a high level, a highly secure placement, then those will be out of state.
Yes.
Because New Beginnings is the only local residential placement program. So if they're looking, if the Department of Youth and Rehabilitative Services are looking for a placement that New Beginnings does not meet the that a young person is not going to benefit from that placement, then they're going to go to somewhere else out of state.
You know, 2 weeks ago, we had the director of the Department of Youth and Rehabilitative Services up here. Clint Lacey was one of the former directors. And we talked about this same issue in terms of he's working with the credible messengers. And this guy, I was surprised. I went down to New Beginnings and we did a 2-hour radio show 5 years ago from New Beginnings with Clint Lacey. He was a director. And he and a young lady who's no longer with us named Linda Harley Harper, their motto was, "Let's lead by love." I never heard of a guy running a juvenile institution detention facility, and he talked about let's lead with love. And he tried to instill this concept of philosophy and love in dealing with our youth. We need to reach out and give our youth love and affection. These kids ain't, all kids ain't bad. They need jobs, people. If you spend $300 billion for tanks, airplanes, and drones in a war, give us $50 billion. And I bet you we can stop the crime and reduce the crime in most of these black communities. We got two more callers on the line. You're on the line. Next caller, please. Question or comment? You're on the air.
Hey, Roach.
Hey.
Hello. This is Joe. How are you?
This is who?
Joe.
What Joe? I know 100 Joes.
No. I know. This is new Joe. Never called. I listened to you many years. Never called you before, Roach.
Okay. All right, Joe. Come on, new Joe.
All right. Here's my comment, man. I spent a lot of time in Upper Northwest where I work, driving, you know, Massachusetts Avenue, Wisconsin, Connecticut, Western Avenue, Tenleytown, Friendship Heights. There's no National Guard here, brother. None.
That's right.
They're all in the black and brown communities. And I want to make that point. You know, they're not up here. They're not bothering the white rich people. I'm just telling you.
Right.
It's all
in the
working class neighborhoods and the poor people. And the comment about bringing other National Guard from out of state, it's one thing to bring National Guard from D.C. to D.C. or the MPD, you know, police area, but to bring outsiders, they got no business being in our community.
Yes.
Right, because they need it in their own community more.
You're right, Joe. You're right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
As a fellow, as a former National Guardsman from Maryland, you know, we were sent to Maryland for problems. We didn't go anywhere else. We stayed in Maryland. And now these states just keep their National Guard in their own state, and D.C. should police their own National Guard right here.
Yes. Yes. You're right. Thank you, Joe, for calling. We appreciate you coming. Our next caller, please. Question or comment? Thanks a lot, New Joe.
Hello.
You're on air. Hello.
Yes, I have a question about the young people. I heard them say that they gave all the reasons and the what they felt was needed to help them. I want to know, what are they planning to do to help themselves? Are they willing to be in the house, do what they think is going to keep them safe? What have anyone asked them that question? Is how they plan on keeping themselves safe.
Go ahead, Nicole. You was at the meeting last week.
Yeah, we've had a lot of meetings since last week. But young people have been keeping themselves safe, right? So the part of the reason that young people move in groups is because there's safety in numbers.
Numbers,
right?
Yes.
Part of the reason that young people, we have a Kids Ride Free program, is because young people were part of advocating for what they need to get to school, right? And so I think, while I understand the spirit of the question, what feels important is that young people develop ways of keeping themselves safe and what they need. And while we as adults may not agree with those things or have a critique of them or think they need to do different things, all of us have been young people. All of us have, taken risks or done certain things. And so I think it's important to say that, is that there is no future without young people. And so
that's right.
And so, yes, I think there's always ways that young people keep themselves safe. And I don't know that the solution to that is just like go in the house, even though many of them are actually scared and are from their normal routine.
Yes.
But I would say with the young people we work with, they work, they have after school activities, they're trying to do, they had summer jobs. So the timing of this federal takeover wasn't a great timing because they were doing all the things that they needed to do to get ready for the fall. And so I don't know that I agree with the assumption that young people should just sit in the house and not be free to move.
You know, go ahead. We got a few minutes left. Tiffany, we had a few minutes left, and I'd like to say to both of you, can you let our listeners know what they can do or inform their kids or them or their family if you're confronted or stopped by the National Guard or ICE? What can you do to protect you and your loved ones in this terrible climate that we exist in now? Go ahead, Tiff.
I think Nicole really hit on this earlier as she was going down through the, the Know Your Rights tips that she has given groups of students, and that those young people have come together to develop and love themselves. So while it is at times difficult to argue or state in response of that, compliance is... while it has been a tool right now used at this moment to really control a population, that if the main goal for our young people is getting home safely, then there is going to be some level of compliance necessary in those police interactions.
Okay.
And so that means, making sure that while you are present, that if they are asking simple questions, but make sure that you have the responses at hand. So am I free to leave? Am I being detained? Making sure that you do know your rights, knowing when and how to exercise them, knowing that you can record but not interfere. And that is how the community keeps itself safe, by disseminating this information, yes, but also by knowing when to exercise it as just, responsible community members.
Yes.
And And the attitudes are so strong, so wrong, calling un-American. This administration is un-American, but they have the nerve to call us un-American. And you can't erase our history, us as a people, but they are sure trying to.
You know what? We got a couple of minutes left, and I just want to say that...
1 minute.
We got 1 minute. Our time is up. We want to thank both of y'all for joining us. Nicole Newman, Critical Exposure Executive Director. Thank you, Nicole. And Tiffany Reed, Esquire, Public Defender Service. Lady, I'm proud to have both of y'all. We are proud to have both of y'all with us this morning. And you will be coming back because we want to get into this a little deeper. Thank you for calling in, listening to our show. We hope you learned something from this. And I just want to, in closing, I want to say, Tiff, if we can get Howard University Law School, Georgetown, all the different law schools, and get the kids, the law students, in their fourth year graduate or practicum, and let the law students provide some kind of relief to these kids as an outlet to file their complaints and grief, because it's going to be a lot. Our time is up. I want to thank you for joining us. This has been Mertine Brown, Roach, and Nikichi is in on travel. Thank Mike Nassal, our engineer. We'll see you next Tuesday to tune in from Crossroads. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
But if it don't work out, here's what you ought to do. Now just hold on.
The Can I Kick It outdoor summer movie series presented by Shaolin Jazz is back. And it's coming to Southeast D.C. for the first time ever. Enjoy 3 nights of martial arts and action films, scored live with hip-hop, soul, and more. Mixed by WPFW alum DJ Two Tone Jones. The series kicks off Saturday, August 16th with the screening of Captain America: Brave New World at Anacostia Park. It continues Saturday, September 20th at Skyland Town Center with the screening of Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon. Then on Saturday, October 25th, the series concludes with the screening of I'm Gonna Get You Sucker at the Capitol Hill Boys Club Artist Gallery. Each event begins at 7 p.m. with a guest DJ set, followed by the movie at 8:30 p.m. Blankets and lawn chairs are welcome. For more details, visit shaolinjazz.com. shaolinjazz.com.
The United Black Community presents the 21st annual Love Supreme, a musical, poetic birthday tribute to another Ruth, John Coltrane, featuring the Nasa Abadie Quintet, Cindy Brown, Kenny Carroll, Nana Malaya, and more on Friday, September 19, 2025 at 7 p.m. at E-Life Restaurant, 9033 Central Avenue, Capitol Heights, Maryland. Details, UBC in D.C. at yahoo.com, 240-832-7203. Thank you.
D.C. Jazz Fest happens August 27th to the 31st with Branford Marsalis, Layla Hathaway, Ron Carter, the String Queens, and more, including citywide concerts from downtown to the wharf. Labor Day weekend. Details at dcjazzfest.org to get your jazz on.
I'm Jackie Lukeman, chairperson of the Black Alliance for Peace Coordinating Committee, with an editorial. Donald Trump imposed federal control of the Metropolitan Police Department and deployed the National Guard in Washington, D.C. under the pretext of public safety. This follows his March 2025 executive order establishing the Safe and Beautiful Task Force aimed at addressing crime in D.C. and after the Secure D.C. Omnibus Bill was passed, the latest in Democrat crime laws that have devastated marginalized communities, particularly Black, African, working class, and youth. Now Trump goes further and invokes law and order to justify military occupation. Militarized domestic occupation that advances as the U.S. and the West deepen their support for the Zionist genocide in Gaza, while they normalize repression of the global masses struggling against and resisting them. We must confront the colonial capitalist structures and oppressive class rule that made all of this possible. We must fight Trump's authoritarianism, but we must also fight Democrat tough-on-crime criminalization of poverty and dissent. And we must fight for a future where safety is not imposed by militarization, but built through structures of popular democracy, peace, social justice, and collective liberation. The Black Alliance for Peace says, end the colonial occupation of Washington, D.C. No justice, no peace, no compromise, no retreat. The full statement can be found at blackallianceforpeace.com/BAP statements. This has been Jackie Lukman, chairperson of the Black Alliance for Peace Coordinating Committee, with an editorial.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino media collective.